Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Got a new intro. I like that. We may have had it last week, but I couldn't have told you.
Well, you're certainly talking to the wrong person on this thing. Y'all rejected my call about three times.
But it turned out to be a decent joke.
It did. But, Mike, before we go any further, I'm... You know, not nothing against Bobby's favorite team, but Atlanta Falcons. I mean, I just never been a Falcons fan. I was early on, and they just let you down every year, and I just... But, Bobby, you have to be elated on what happened this week.
Are you talking about the deal in Arkansas? Just tickle me to death.
You talk about what goes around, comes around.
Yes, sir.
When I heard that, the first person I promise you I thought of was Bobby Simmons. If you that know, boy ain't elated,
I mean, he
got worse today, you know.
Oh, geez. He's a habitual liar, and it's just, you know, everything they find out is more and more,
you
know.
You heard about the motorcycle chick, the motorcycle model of.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's the reason I can't stand that boy went to Alabama, Saban.
Yeah.
He did Miami the same way. Of course, what this boy did in Atlanta to the Falcons, how many games had he been there, Bobby? Four or five?
No, he'd been there a little longer than that. But he, you know, on Sunday after the ball game at his press conference, he says, "I'm going to be here till the bitter end." And the next time we seen him, he was at a press conference in Arkansas later that night or early the next morning.
Well, that
and
was
I'm glad to be the new head coach.
That was the bitter end.
Yeah.
I can't. What, let me ask you something. What are contracts for?
Well, evidently they don't mean anything in the National Football League.
I know one thing. To me, and I hate to say it for about fans and players and alumni and all, but Arkansas got what they deserved.
Oh yeah,
by hiring him. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Well, you know him and Tuberville were supposed to be good friends, and when Tuberville was kind of on the verge of being out at Auburn, you know, he was actually on a plane sitting on the runway in Auburn, Alabama, thinking he was going to be the new head coach and they were going to run him off. All of that went down before he ever came to Atlanta. I mean, he's a piece of work.
I remember when all that was going on, but I didn't know he was the culprit.
Oh, yeah.
In on it.
So like you say, what goes around comes around.
But anybody hire him? I couldn't believe it. I did. I want you to really believe that now. I thought of you. I said, if Bobby Simmons... not eating this up.
Oh, yeah. Everybody in Atlanta, just that's the talk of the talk radio stations, man. Everybody's just...
God.
And the poor people in Arkansas, the fans over there, you know, they were all, you know, they didn't care. They wanted to forgive him because, you know, he's been there, what, 2 years? He's like 19-5 or something.
They said he could
forget and win football games. That's all they're concerned about.
They talk about he could have a national champion team this year. I heard him talking about that today. I mean, they said he's got a team that's. But you know how much money he left on the table? $18 million.
Mm-mm-mm. And we don't know what his wife's doing either. She
hadn't heard nothing about none.
May
of
take
that.
Some more.
Oh, you know how, I imagine how humiliated she must feel.
Ooh. And went from making that kind of money to nothing.
Maybe
you talking about overnight? Overnight.
Ooh.
Oh, this is. Maybe I don't know. I don't know who would hire him.
Well, I'm curious to see. You know, I know football ain't got nothing to do with our show, but I'm curious to see what they're going to do in New Orleans now. Did you hear the deal they did today? They named one of their assistant coaches to be the head coach for 6 weeks, and then when the guy that Joe Vitt, when he comes off suspension, then he takes over as the head coach. So they're going to have a head coach for 6 weeks, and then in midstream they change head coaches.
Well, why don't they let the three of us go down there and run it until they're all off?
I mean, we probably could do about as well.
I tell you, this world is...
I'll stick with the clowns that I know what they're doing.
I heard that, brother.
But whoever brings hires this Petrino, it may not be this year, whatever, but whoever hires him, that would be like some territories that we were all involved in one time or another that brought talent in, knowing it's a cancer when you bring it in.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And you and I should sit there and name how many right here in Georgia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you knew it was bad news when they headed this way, but they thought they could make a dollar, so they tried it. I mean, that's just...
Well, you know it's the truth.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just had to get that off my chest. I hope you feel better about this because, well, I couldn't stand to look at that man on the sidelines after he did that when he went to Arkansas, just knowing that.
Yeah.
I mean, how could you even? There's no shame in his game. I'll give
but
him credit.
But you know,
for that.
Somebody will hire him. Maybe they won't hire him this year, but you know, after a year or so, somebody will hire him.
Oh, somebody's gonna hire him.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, they'll hire him.
And the thing that I, and this is being judgmental, and I shouldn't do this, but I tend to agree with the guy I heard on the radio today. You know, if that was going on at Arkansas, it had to be going on other places. This is just one.
Yeah, this isn't his first
rodeo. No, sir.
Mm-mm-mm. His claim to fame was Louisville, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Some guys, it's all work.
Well, listen, if Cole Brothers has got this much excitement, y'all gonna have a heck of a year.
I heard that. Well, it may be a work, but whoever their booker is doing a heck of a job. I'll give them that.
Well, tonight we are going to. We're going to discuss Tennessee wrestling tonight. We're going to be nice to Tennessee wrestling because we're going to have two guys who spent the majority of their careers in North Georgia and Tennessee and thereabouts. Two different generations. Our friend Gene Bennett, whose ring name among others was Gene Lavelle. He had a lot of mass personas. Did a lot of things under the hood for Nick Gulas and various promoters and. And our friend, the dirty white boy, Jimmy Powell, is going to join us. So I'm going to do a quick commercial break, and when we get back, we'll get Gene on the line with us. We'll be right back.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Red Gunkel or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
They get the music from that they use for the bumpers.
I have no idea. I have no
Am
idea.
Am I still on the air?
Yeah, you're here.
You dropped off, but you came back.
I had to call back in. I went to turn my speaker on, and I lost you guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they the TV station came up with that music.
Huh. I bet if somebody could come up with all that and make a CD of it, they could sell a ton of that stuff to old wrestling fans. I'm the proud owner of the Michael Hayes Fantasia Band, Bath Street album, which was actually not too terribly bad. He had some good musicians on that album. He did most of his vocals. He was imitating a guy, I don't know if either one of you have ever heard of him, of Jim Dandy Mangrum, who still is the lead singer of a band called Black Oak Arkansas, if you guys have ever heard of them. But that's who Michael Hayes patterned his whole self after, with the long blonde hair and rock and roll stuff. But, that's who his vocal sound like called that album. That'd be a good project, somebody. Find all that Georgia Championship Wrestling bumper music and put it all on one CD.
You know who I wish I'd have patterned myself after, all, you know?
Who's that?
Ozzie Guillen.
Who?
She gives me publicity or what?
Jeez.
You'd have been a great heel in Florida if you'd have been able to do that.
Would that have been over or what?
They interviewed John Crook. You know who he was, the big heavy first baseman who used to play for the Phillies?
Yes, Crook, yes.
Yeah. All right, they interviewed John Crook on him and Mazzoni. Leo Mazzoni used to be Braves pitching coaches on the radio every morning. They were talking yesterday. And Crook and Guillen came up through the minor league system together. He said he had known Ozzie Guillen since he was 16. He said he's always been crazy. He said, and he always thought he could say whatever he wanted to and get away with it. And he said, this time he found out he couldn't. He said, it's the first time in his life he's ever had to, he's been called on the carpet. He said, he's always just been crazy, and people thought, well, he's just nuts. It's just him.
That's like Sammy Sosa when he went up before the senators or the congressmen or whoever went up there. They said, did you ever take steroids? Baseball been very good to me. They use that language barrier as a gimmick, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know that from the business, Bobby.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You've been around enough of them, Mike, you know.
Oh, yeah. They could take him with John Rocker, and they have a great team with him, right? Rocker. Let me get Mr. Bennett on the line with us. And tonight's show, by the way, and we'll have to mention it again if Charlie's on the line. Tonight's show is sponsored by Renegade T-shirts. Bobby and Gene have to put together a commercial that we can.
We can put a little spot together for it. We should have some operating capital after we get back from Vegas next week.
Hello.
Is this George Goodless?
I'm not quite. You can call me Ray or you can call me James. Don't call me George Goodless.
Well, I'd like to welcome you to our show.
How you guys doing?
All right. This is our good friend Gene Lavelle or Gene Bennett or Black Demon or the Destroyer or the Green Hornet or whichever one of a dozen names you want to pick. Gene is, and I apologize. I thought about this today. Gene's called in a couple times on the show, but then why in the world we've never had you on as a guest is been a been sadly overlooked, and I apologize for that. Having you
Gene,
on with us.
Gene, this is Jerry Oaks. Did you ever go as Ozzie Guillen?
No.
You still be over. You did.
Michael?
Yes, sir.
Michael?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Gene.
Hey, Michael.
Yes, sir. I'm. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
What?
Something cutting in and out. I don't know what it is. That picture you sent was not me.
It's not you. Okay.
I'll tell you who I think it is.
Who's that?
Don Wright.
Hey, could be. Can't even think about that.
The reason I say it's not me, I never wore a white face hood except for the El Diablo hood, so that wasn't the El Diablo hood, so
it's
on a white face.
I bet Vince has got a Cuban heel within the next 6 weeks.
I don't doubt that a bit. I'm available if he got the
may hire a fire football coach.
Yeah. It's
too bad we don't have a territory. We could. Petrino would be a heck of a manager, wouldn't he?
Oh, yes.
He could manage us again.
Yeah. he's probably already, I mean, he's got a valet to bring with him, so, you know.
Yeah, he'd be right on top.
In more ways than one.
How did you get started in the business, Gene? Were you a fan as a kid coming up?
Oh, yes, sir. I used to like to watch Mr. Len Rossi and Dex Riley and the Welches and the Fuller and all that bunch of wrestling. Toyamada.
I thought you were going to say Strangler Lewis and Jim Londis.
I'm not that old, but
that's who Jerry grew up watching.
Yeah, Russell Londis, what are you talking about?
So how did you get involved in this?
Well, I loved it, so I just happened to be around somewhere or another where Todd and White and Nick Carter was and asked them about training me, you know. And they agreed to. And I wished I hadn't agreed to it after about 6 weeks of it, but I stayed with it.
You had two good ones in Carter and Tarzan White.
I got some fingers broke and everything else, but that's the way they used to do you.
Oh, yeah. So what was the first area that you started in, up around North Georgia?
The first area I started in Alabama. And then I went, after I worked a few independent matches over there, I started training in late 63 and actually started wrestling in 64. And first time I just happened one night, got my gear and all together and went up to this auditorium, and I knew where the wrestlers went in at. So I went in to open my bag like I was working that night. And here come Nick off the stage. Asked me what I wanted, and I told him. Asked me, need anybody to work? And he said, possibility. He said, come on back here. And so that's where I got my start with Nick Goodwin.
Now, where did you start working your mask gimmicks first, or were you Dean Lavelle for a while? Or
I was Dean Lavelle, and then he started putting me on it. I wrestled with Dean Lavelle a few times, and, you know, about 8 or 10 matches probably, and then got to going under hoods.
They got that face under that bright ring light, and they said, we got to do something about this.
I heard that.
Oh,
I wrestled both ways, really, a lot of times. Man, I'd offer the money. Get the money. I'd work opening matches as a baby and come back and work semi-main or main one as a heel under the hood. Anything to make a buck, sir.
I see. That's the way it was back in those days. Who were some of the people that you came with? I know you and Pepe Lopez spent some time together
Frank Martinez. Al Bundahood, I worked a good bit with Corsica Joe up in Missouri. And I tag team with Dromo some in Tennessee. I enjoyed working with him as a baby. Also healed against him. And you mentioned Pepe, so and that's Frank Martinez, and there was Gypsy Joe. Let's see. I can't remember all of them really. There's so many of them, many different outfits I wore. It's pathetic.
Probably ran into yourself sometime. You book so many different places, you bump into yourself, wouldn't you?
Probably so. Well, Nick, you know, at one time, you know, Nick had a big, they had a big territory.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd had, at one time, it was 8 different teams of the Blue Inferno.
That's amazing.
They also done that with interns.
The interns. Justin Frank Martinez, right, with the original.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if you know, could you guys appear on television as you know, the various Blue Infernos, or would they just loop everything off of Frank and Gypsy Joe and just let you guys, whoever else was pulling that?
It's according to what area the territory is in. I pull TV in Memphis in Blue Inferno. And, you know, they might be in Nashville or something, or Birmingham. It's just according to where you was at. You could pull TV. You know, I pulled TV on is that gimmick before. A lot of time back in, though, Nick was bad about canning stuff out. That's like I was telling Bobby, you know, my mother, she'll be 95 year old, birthday in July. She's not smart to the business whatsoever. Never will be if she's waiting on me to smarten her up. But, I've worked in Chattanooga before and my mother would see it, they can it to Birmingham. That's the way they used to do a lot of the matches. I don't guess there's none of them old tapes, them old big reel tapes around no more. If they are, they're probably rotten.
I've got a couple of people on TV that they had King Sheffield gave me. I guess it's been almost 10 years ago, and I've been they're in Mobile at my parents' house. I've never been able to find anybody that can convert them for less than a fortune.
Yes,
they're not real old. So they're old now, but they weren't they're not back in the 60s and 70s from Tupelo. I think they're from 81, 82, something like that.
Trouble with stuff like that, though, they taped over a lot of it.
Yeah, they taped over them until they were, the tape were no good, then they just threw them away.
Yeah, the reason we did that, a lot of people question that, the cost was so prohibitive to keep. I mean, if we'd have kept everything we ever did at Georgia Championship, we'd have had to have a warehouse the size of Atlanta Stadium to hold everything.
Oh, that's what they do, you know. But
yeah, same thing. There's just no way you could do it. And if there was something, if you shot a particular angle off of a shot, and, of course, you go back into the days of 2-inch tape, you know, those things weighed 18 pounds apiece. And we used to, Greyhound Bus Line used to keep, we kept them in business, moving tapes, because it was just the most cost-effective way to do it. But there was, if you did a particular angle or a match, you might pull that segment off and dub it off on another tape to keep that. But, those 2-inch tapes, you know, they probably, in Georgia, they might have bicycled on a 6-week tour, and then we recorded over them.
Yeah, speaking of Greyhound, I've rode them to the matches before.
That's one thing I never had the pleasure of doing.
Well, one thing about, see, Birmingham, you can see the Greyhound bus station from the City Auditorium. Memphis, you can get off and go right straight to the play. A lot of places like Nashville. Bus station was in walking distance to Sanford, so.
What you're talking about the television, Bobby. I wonder, you know, there are things that still pop up from, you know, as far back as the early 50s and everything from, I guess in those days they were, they called kinescope or whatever.
Yep.
But, you know, I'm wondering, like, I myself have got, you know, stuff on that is now on DVD, but from Georgia from 79, 80, 81, 82, stuff like that. So I guess a lot of that probably originated, like our friend Ted Allen. I've said many times, he had the first VCR I ever saw. And I know he taped just about everything that was available to be taped. And eventually that's how that stuff got out there. But I'm wondering how, like, some of the stuff from Detroit and stuff like that, because I mean, every territory that I know of did the same thing as far as the tapes. They used them until they wore out. But I'm wondering if who was smart enough to keep some of that, because obviously somebody did.
I got some. Joe Pettisino was running all that on television.
Yeah,
I got a lot of that on Beta. Put back somewhere or another. I can lay my hand on it if I wanted to. I had never converted it, but, you know, Beta. It's pretty clear, you know. It's clearer than VHS, really.
Yeah, but it was all, Beta was so expensive that VHS just knocked it out of the market eventually.
Yeah.
But I can't remember if that's what Ted had or not. I know he had one. He had one of those huge top-loaded ones. We used to stop at his house in Carterville on the way to Chattanooga. If we worked in Chattanooga, we'd stop there and spend a couple of hours watching tapes and eating lunch before we'd head up to Chattanooga. Well, I know you mentioned Missouri earlier, Dean. I know you worked out for Henry's, what's his name?
Henry Rodney.
Henry Rodney.
Yeah.
Was he tied in with Lewis?
Yeah, he used some of Nick's guys. And he also, he used when Rip Tyler, the original Rip Tyler, when, you know, he had a few guys work.
Yeah.
He used them a good bit. In fact, you know, that's worse. Where Tommy Rich got started and everything up there with him and everything.
I think that's
not Tommy Rich, not Tommy Rich. Tommy Gilbert.
Yeah. Well, Eddie Gilbert broke in there, and so did Ricky Morton.
Yeah.
a lot of guys that they would send to Malden to be trained. Now, did you ever work for Bill Golden at Paducah?
Yeah, I worked. I'd like back when I'd be at Chattanooga TV, and Nick sent me down. I'd go down to Alabama and work for Golden, leave there and go to Birmingham Television. So Birmingham TV was 10:30 at night.
Now, you're talking about Billy Golden when he was running Montgomery, but, you know, his brother Phil opened up in Paducah, Kentucky, was running opposition.
No, I never worked for him.
Yeah.
I worked for Bill, but not Phil.
Bill took a lot of mixed talent. He took Weingroff and the Von Brauners.
I remember when that happened.
A lot of those guys went over there and worked for him, and he started his
own. Only the intern. In fact, he had a set of intern, but it wasn't Raymond now. They refused to go.
Well, you know, and we talked about this privately, you and I and Bobby and stuff, and a lot of people give Julius grief about his payoffs. He had a very bad reputation.
And there were certain guys down in nobody's head.
Yeah, there were certain guys that he took care of. And
I can't complain myself. No complaints from me, then.
What's that? From you?
I can't find anybody to pay off myself.
Well, he gave a lot of guys breaks. I will say that. I mean, a lot of guys. Early
he did
breaks.
Me for a 16-year-old kid, you know, and gave me a break.
And, I mean, you think about Ron West, who started working for him when he was 13 or 14, Harry Gordy. And our guy we're going to get on with us here in just a few minutes, Jimmy Powell. Jimmy was real young when he started with him. But another league that you worked with that I wanted to get some information on, I know when Lou Fez opened up the UWF in 76, you worked for him. What was he like to work for?
Oh, he was a pleasure to work for. Sure was.
He was strictly promoting then. He wasn't. He didn't work at all, did he?
No, he didn't work none for that. He just strictly announced, promoted.
Now, who was booking him?
Had Jody up there booking some. Jody booked a little while for him.
Oh, really? Jody Hamilton?
Yeah.
And Saul Weingroff was involved in that as well, wasn't he?
Yeah. Saul was up there. Al Costa was there. I can name everybody was there. Frank Morrell was there, the Southern Spoiler.
Yeah. Well, that's where Troy Graham got his start.
Yeah.
It was with that group.
Yeah, I got, you know what? You probably have a copy of it. I had got one of the groundies, Troy, working against. Ted Allen on there.
Yeah, Ted. That's right. Ted was up there.
Yeah,
Mike Boyette was up there.
Sure. Yeah, Mike Boyette.
I'm just wondering why he didn't go any further with that. Any idea why that didn't
run out of talent?
Really?
Run out of baby faces? Didn't have no baby faces. Had plenty of heels. That's another thing. When I first got in the business, up there at night, around Nashville, it wasn't nothing. The guys up there, they didn't do no wrestling back then. They only kick and punch, kick and punch. That's all they know. They didn't know how to wrestle. That's all they used to do up there.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer. A lot of people don't think a heel is supposed to know how to wrestle, which is, I did.
Well, I think you get over better as a heel if you do that. I mean, you're not showing yourself anything by just coming in and throwing punches and stomping and stuff like that. But if you start wrestling and then you start cheating because you're getting out-wrestled, I
I've said that before. I think that's how he'll get his heat.
Well, I just like one night up there in Nashville. I worked against Charlie Cook. And I put him in a rolling short arm scissor. And the match was over. Kojo was out, sitting out there, getting ready. You know, he's going to work main event. Kojo was there. He looked at me and said, "You would not do that to me." I said, "Well, I would if you got in the ring." He said, "Hill's not supposed to do that." I said, "Whatever."
Where's Charlie Cook?
What'd
he say?
Where's Charlie Cook, since you mentioned his name? I don't know. Last time I heard, he was down in Louisiana. I don't know where he's at. I wish I could find him. I really enjoyed working with him.
He's from Tuscaloosa. He was a high school
coach. Yeah, he was
there
for a while.
But that's been many years ago. I heard that. I have no clue where he is either.
He married a gal up there in Calhoun, but they divorced. So.
How did he get in this? Any of you guys know?
I'm not sure.
Atlas?
Buddy Atlas?
Yeah.
Did work around him, Jerry, Buddy Atlas?
Not that I know of.
Well, I don't guess he traveled a whole lot, did he, Gene? I know he ran a lot around North Georgia, parts of Tennessee.
South Georgia. He worked South Georgia, North Florida. And he also, he went up there and worked with Nick. Me and him tag team a little bit, maybe. But he was up in Knoxville, and him and I forgot who he's tagging with was working against the Kangaroos, Al Costello and Don Kent. And Atlas told him he refused to put them over, and so they fired him, sent him on his merry way.
He came down to Mobile and spent a few months in Mobile. And,
yeah, he done a gig down there where he had a rose in his mouth, didn't he, come to the ring?
Carrying rose into the ring, yeah. He was a gorgeous type. But his real name was Max Fuller, but he went by...
Yeah, Buddy Fuller. He's a real Buddy Fuller. Max Bud Fuller.
Is he still a judge up there around Carterville?
No, he's out of judging, and he's preaching. Was, now he retired. Matt, his son, done the preaching. He's still senior pastor up here at the church, right up the road here.
I talked to him years ago, after when you gave me his phone number. I called him and talked to him. Sounded like a real interesting guy, but
I tried to get him to come to Mobile. I tried to get him to come down there. Yeah, I think about it, but that's how far it goes. I don't know. He may be holding a payoff grudge. You can't ever tell.
I think that's why Jerry won't come.
That's the case. Nobody would show up.
That's right. I told somebody, if I had the money, I'd like to. Everybody come to Mobile that worked for Nick, and I knew worked for Nick. Set an envelope out there on where they're going to sit, put $15 in it.
All in $1 bills.
Huh? Yeah, all $1 bills.
They'd fight for it. You know they would.
They'd look around and see if Nick's in the room.
I talked to Bill Bowman a couple of hours ago, and he said to tell each and every one of you guys hello and give you his regards. So I'm passing that along before I forget about it.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I really like Bill Bowman.
Yep.
That's my adopted daddy.
You got you a good adopted daddy there.
I do that. You're absolutely right. We've gone 4 days this time without speaking, and that's the longest we've gone in probably 6 months. It just added my mind when I woke up this morning. I hadn't talked to him in a couple of days. I didn't call him. And just as I got back to the hotel this afternoon, my phone rang, and it was him. So we had a good conversation.
I worked for a few times with one of Jerry's buddies.
Who's that?
Van Fleet.
Did you really?
I sure did.
You know, I never met the man.
I worked for him. Last time I worked for him, me and Atlas went down to Jacksonville, Florida, and I worked a match down there. Sorry. I don't know what year it was. It was in the 70s, early 70s.
I heard many stories about him, but never met the man.
He was something else. Now, buddy, a lot of people give him grief and all, but he made some money, and the guy made pretty good money with him, too. So he takes six guys and a referee, and he's barnstormed the cold country.
I heard he was a wealthy man.
He was. He made some money at that.
Do you ever work any shows for Hall Strickland up in North Georgia?
Yes, sir. And Hall's tag team, son. Worked up in the Carolinas.
They said he'd see a guy on the front row weigh about 300-400 pounds. He said he'd go get him, drag him in the back, put a mask on him, and put him in a ring.
I
go
never
through the crowd,
sell
his referee's
like
license.
I never know him doing nothing like that. He might have now, but I never know. Hoss is all right.
We're going to stay with us. I'm going to get our other half of our show tonight. I'm going to give him a call real quick and get him on the line with us.
All right.
He's the second generation of Hula stars that we're going to have on our program tonight. I told Bobby, by the way, our show is sponsored by Renegade Features. So we'll have to have you guys cut us a promo to put on our show.
We'll do that after we go there.
I told him we'll have some operating capital next week.
Yeah, that's right. Mr. Smith said he had a... Hello?
Jimmy Powell.
Hey, man, what's going on?
All right, you got Michael Noyes, Bobby Simmons, Jerry Oates, and Gene Bennett on the line with you. Welcome to Peace State Pandemonium.
Well, thanks. I'm glad. Appreciate you inviting me to join you guys tonight. I was listening to you for a while there, and then I just kind of got, I think I hit the wrong button. I'm still not real computer literate, so, you know.
That's all right.
None of us are either.
Well, I've done this thing. The show's liable to end any second now, anyway.
Yeah, I hear you.
I'm glad we got it going tonight.
Oh, man.
You probably have some names you're familiar with, like Buddy Atlas, and you started with Nick Gulas. How old were you when you started with him?
When I went to work for Nick, I was just about 15 and a half. I went to work. My wrestling ring got me in, but I was just looking here. I got home just a few minutes ago, went down my building before it got dark, and pulled out my own bag I had that my wife's going to kill me for having this stuff spread all over the house when she gets here, probably. But probably the first wrestling match where I ever got to meet a wrestler, other than just going to the auditorium, was that my dad actually had a building in Lafayette. Captain Hook, who was Terry Gordy's uncle, rented that building to have wrestling. So when you said Buddy Atlas, I just looked here. I got a wrestling poster. Buddy Atlas versus Wild Man Watson, Cowboy Langston versus the Avenger, Jackie and Buddy Lewis versus Dennis Hall and Captain Hook. I had that was all in, goodness, I don't know, 78, I guess. So 77, maybe. I don't know. I can't remember exactly, but... That was Terry. I think Terry wasn't there that night, probably, but he was there the next week. Mr. Wrestling and Jerry Mika, and Terry was Mr. Wrestler. They were in the main event the next week, and Jerry Mika, of course, was the guy Terry teamed with a lot when he was young. But yeah, then I started for Nick just kind of. He needed a ring in Riceville, Tennessee. His ring truck had broke down, and it was kind of a last-minute thing. And Larry Cheatham gave him my phone number, and they called me, and I set my ring up that night in Riceville. I was just like, they called me at 5 o'clock or something, you know. And I rushed up to Riceville, Tennessee, which was it's up above Cleveland. And I guess I just... They liked my ring that night, and I went to work the next week for them, pulling the ring and refereeing or selling tickets or whatever, selling programs or raffling that when they would let me. It was kind of hard to get a shot to wrestle, but I did after a while.
And you said that was in 78?
Yeah, probably. I think I was probably 79 and 80, right around 80 was... my Nick time, the 78 was probably when Cowboy Langston, those guys were, Captain Hook and all of them were here. So I think I started working for Nick in early 80. And matter of fact, I just pulled out something, let's see, from 81, one of his shows that I ran for him. I checked up, I've got the checkup sheet here. I was digging through stuff and found it. Fort Payne, Alabama, and Jerry and David Novak, who were the bounty hunters.
Right.
They were there. Herman Dolan, Sammy Collins, who was from around Gadsden. Pat Rose, Arvel Hutto, Bobby Eat. The payoffs, Pat Rose got $15, Bill Smithson got $20, Arvel Hutto got $15, Bobby Eaton got $30. The bounty hunters got $30 apiece, Herman Dolan got $20. Sammy Collins got 15, so that was the payoffs in Fort Payne, Alabama for Nick's show. And I've got all the signed tickets here, actually, still. I don't know why I didn't turn them in, but I've got them right here where everybody signed for their money that night. And me, I got $20. I signed $20, so Nick got a 15% booking fee, and it was just... That was it. This is the story. The paperwork to prove it, you know. But yeah. Nick. So I didn't stay. Nick actually, I graduated in '81. I went right to Nashville to work in the office, and then he sold to Buddy Floyd. And I had I was like a lost puppy. I figured nobody else in the world would use me. But just a few months after that, me and him came back and ran Chattanooga, and he ran it under George's name and. I found a thing here the other day for it, actually, at the auditorium on Thursday night. Randy Savage against the Sheep, Tojo Yamamoto against Brad Barton, Candy Devine against Sherry Martel, Big Red against the Assassin, and Jimmy Powell and Angelo Poffo against Doug Vines and Big Boy Williams, and then Tony Falk against Gary Lawler. I don't remember who Gary Lawler was, but so those were just kind of, I guess, those years when Nick was finishing up. I got in right at the end, you know, but it was fun.
I'm
one of the
kids.
Yeah, it was Gary, and I'm not sure who that was. I think that was some guy that Nick could just him, say Tony Falk.
I can tell you exactly who it was. You said the Sheik was on that card. He came in with the Sheik. He was one of the Sheik's guys. He worked for the Sheik as Gary Fargo. He was just
okay.
A job guy. He was a TV job on TV with the Sheik back in the 70s and early 80s.
Oh, okay.
And he was forever using, you know, some other star's last name, just as the Sheik did kind of a rib towards the other guys. I mean, like I said, he worked
yeah.
with Gary Fargo up there in Detroit.
Okay.
There was a guy, and I have been meaning for years to ask if anybody knew whatever became. You guys remember Ronnie Horn?
Yeah.
Anybody
know what ever came? I got some kind of contact from him about 8 years ago. And I don't remember what it was, but I remember him very well.
He was one of Jackson's guys in Birmingham, but with come up and do Atlanta TV, and then he and Jackson worked quite a bit in all those little towns like Atala and Boaz and places like that.
Bobby there with you?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, I actually found a Georgia Championship Wrestling envelope here and all this stuff too. I got $100 a night for my ring. That was pretty good, I guess, back then.
Yeah,
$50 for Atlanta TV, and then I got a $10.99 here for 1981, right after Nick closed, and I met Ronnie down in Rome at the Rome Memorial Gym one night with Terry Gordy and you guys, you know, when I come down there and started working. My $10.99 was $3,334.90. So, that was 1981. I don't know how long in the year I worked, but that's what I just found that a while ago. I didn't even know I had it.
Jimmy.
Hey.
It's Gene.
Hey, Gene. What's going on, buddy?
You know, I worked up there at that skating rink you're talking about.
Up at the building, my dad's building?
With Cowboy Langston and all that, you know.
Oh, did you? Oh, okay. I just didn't. Yeah. I know there was a red shadow there. There was a green shadow. Mo Johnson. Actually, Mo Johnson was the first guy I ever wrestled in a match in front of a crowd.
Mad. Cisco Grimaldi, Al Velasco.
Yeah,
and,
Al Velasco, yeah.
All of us worked up there.
Yeah. Yeah, they had some good cards. Hook really did have some good cards. I mean, you know, he was doing Channel 61 TV and, you know, running some.
Yeah.
But he didn't ever pay no rent. I know that. Dad finally, he moved after about 6 weeks not paying any rent. So it wasn't no, you know, wrestling was just wrestling. It didn't really matter if it was Nick Gulas or not. So, you know,
yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it was. Hey, Lordy. Abdul Zatar, you remember him?
Yeah, Rick Sanchez.
Rick Sanchez, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he worked up there a lot. And Rick Connors. I'm finding some more posters while we're talking, I guess. That's why I'm I forgot about having this bag till I got down there while I go and pulled it out. But I don't know. I had a good time. Fun as a kid, you know, with Barry Booker and Wayne Ferris, and I was 15 years old. That was quite an education.
Oh, geez. Larry Booker's the funniest human being I ever met in my life.
He was. He, you know, he actually built the porch on my house that burned before the one I'm in now. Him and Bill Smithson and a couple of guys came down from Nashville. They were working for us down here, and so they came down and stayed a few days with me and built my porch. They were hilarious. My wife used to lock herself in the bedroom every night.
Oh.
Because they were known for shaving men and women's eyebrows. One. You know, just doing all kinds of crazy stuff. First person that went to sleep or passed out usually got something shaved.
Oh,
Joyce Crable can testify to that. Was at her house one night when one of her best friends passed out. Booker took her eyebrow, and the next morning she got up and she went to brush her teeth and screamed like a wild person. Oh, Lordy. Those were the days. You know.
Oh, yes. Goodness.
Except for Jerry never any ribs, did you, Jerry?
Yes. Jerry Oaks never played a rib, I don't think.
No, no. I feel like I got the
Lord. Yeah, I was always scared of Jerry Oaks.
Well, what?
Yeah, he was just, I don't know, it's just something about that look he had in the, you know. Such a serious look you had, Jerry. I don't know.
That's a compliment.
It is a compliment. It certainly is. Him and Dromo. I was really scared of Bill Dromo, though.
I'm still scared of Bill Dromo.
Still scared, yeah.
The Tater King.
Yeah. Jerry was nice, Jimmy, after you got to know him. You know, after I told you his bag in a few times, he treated me okay.
Yeah, well, I guess I just missed out on the opportunity to carry his bag. Yeah.
Bobby Simmons. I will be in Mobile next year.
I understand.
There you go. That's one way of getting him down.
Whatever it takes to get you there, brother.
Yeah, come on down, man. I laughed so much those 3 days. Might take me 2 weeks to get over my face cramping.
Oh, I'm telling you. I'm telling you. Jimmy, didn't you, this going back to when you first started, didn't you tell me, or did I hear this right? When you first started, didn't your dad have to drive you, pull the ring and drive because you couldn't drive?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, what happened, I wrestled my first match in Somerville, Georgia for a guy named Dennis Stansel. Captain Hook had been running, and Dennis was refereeing for him, and they got mad at each other, and so Dennis decided to run. And I was 14, and I wore a mask, and I was in the first match against Mo Johnson, and the ring broke the first match. It was horrible. It was had real ropes, and they were rotten, and I don't know. It's just terrible. The ring broke, and my dad, that night, he told me, he said, I tell you what, if you're going to be a wrestler, he said, you'll never have to wrestle in a ring like that again. And he got a buddy of his that was a great welder and a upholstery man, too, and he built a really good wrestling ring, and the man made the canvas, made the turnbuckle pads. I mean, it was like no other ring around here, you know. And well, I used it in Atlanta for a long time, if you remember.
Yeah, yeah.
But I couldn't pull it. We had a club cab truck and a, you know, 18-foot trailer, and I couldn't pull that thing. I was 15 years old, and so Dad would pick me up at school and drive me to the towns, and I'd do my homework in the back seat of that club cab truck. And on the way home, I would sleep because the back seat would lay down and make a bed, and I'd sleep on the way home, and I'd go to school. And we would be in Florence for Nick. We would be in Florence on Monday night, Huntsville on Tuesday. Usually we were off on Wednesday because Nashville ran. Thursday we'd do a spot show. Sometime I've done Bowling Green, Kentucky, which was crazy. And then Friday we'd do a spot show, and Saturday would be Chattanooga. And then we'd do that all the time, and I'd go to school. My dad would drive me. He was really dedicated to me. And he owned the business at the time, too, you know, but it took care of itself pretty much back then. So but that's what he did until I got old enough. He taught me how to back that ring through buildings. First place I ever backed that ring into was the Von Braun Civic Center in Huntsville. And he said, you better not hit the brakes. He said, you just back this thing in here, boy. And I backed down through the hall and right into the middle of the ring, and we set the ring up that night. And after that, he said, you can drive. To this day, I can back a trailer without hardly ever hitting the brakes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean,
Charlie Smith said I didn't ever hit the brakes when I was pulling trailers. That was his story always about me.
You know, the thing is, and people don't realize, you know, unless you were fortunate enough to have a real good trailer, they never pulled real well. And you had that was a lot of weight on those things.
A lot of weight. I'm going to tell you, Bobby, my daddy really did take care of me. He was good to me. He had the trailer built. He had everything done. And it was a very good trailer. I pulled it all over the country. I took it to Detroit. You know, when the first round of, when Georgia went, you know, national, and we went up, you know, I did the second.
Right
there in Huntington and Cleveland, I think it was, and Lord, I don't remember. It seemed like it might have been Columbus, but I can't remember. But then I went, you know, I even had it up there in Michigan working for the Sheik. I actually had to steal it back one time from him.
I was
going to
say, that's, yeah.
Yeah. But that's fun. That was fun times, too.
Jimmy, tell Jerry about the Nick telling them guys to order those outfits.
Oh, man, yeah. Wearing a cube, what'd that say? Y'all there?
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, those two boys from Chattanooga, Nick told them he'd make stars out of them, you know, and so they're pretty good workers, actually, good guys. He told him, says, I want y'all to be a hooded team, so I want you to call Carl Hildegard and order you the nicest suit, nicest outfits, get the hoods, the whole body suit, the legs,
He said, I want you to have blonde hair sewed in the back of the hood so people won't know it's y'all. And he said, don't worry about it, boys. I'll take care of things. So these boys, they got it ordered. It took them about, you know, 3 or 4 weeks to get them in. They got them in. They got their – Nick gave them a booking sheet. They went around and worked the first week. I'll never forget it. I was standing at the auditorium on stage when Nick handed out payoffs. And when they got theirs, they opened it up. There wasn't a check in there. There was just a note. And it had a, had the towns, what they made. And it had a deduction for the suits. And it said that they still owed him money. So,
yeah.
But they were stars. I mean, they were in the semi main event. So, you know.
It costs to be a star.
It does, yeah. Sure does.
Y'all didn't know this. He owned Hildegard.
Who did?
Ghoulish.
What did he say? I'm ghoulish.
Oh, man. Well, I'll tell you what, their stuff lasted. I found a pair of tights about a year ago that it was something I ordered from them back when I was about 19 or 20, I think.
No, they did. They made the best stuff ever. I still got Trump for them.
I do, too.
Yeah, that's it. A lot of stuff now looks like it's made out of panty material.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on that.
Well, you know the thing about K&H, when you know back in the day, you know, you kind of had to be in the business or know somebody in the business to even find out where they were. And the people, you know, they were operating out of the basement of their house, and you'd call them and order your stuff. They'd COD it to you. I mean, you could have it 2 days if you wanted to pay for it, and then it's COD. You didn't even have to send them no money. I mean, it was just and I'm sure some of the boys screwed that up somehow or another, but, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But it was just, I mean, I don't think there's a buffet in the southern United States that we didn't get banned from because some guys are going there and fill their pockets up with chicken and stuff, but, you know.
Yeah. No, no, or a decent motel that we
could. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Couldn't stay in no more, you know. Oh, man. But, yeah, they made some good stuff. I thought that was the greatest stuff until I got Noel Ash, until he made me a pair of boots. I didn't know what boots were, though, man. Those.
Yeah.
A&H boots was all right long you put some more soles on.
Yeah, that was the first thing I did when I'd get them. First pair of boots I bought from them, I think I paid $10 for it. Maybe it was $8, $8 or $10.
Wow.
Trunks were like $6 a pair.
Yeah. Yeah, I ordered they actually, when I had the tie-dye tights and stuff, they actually made those for me. They were pretty, they could do about anything you wanted. That was the only place I could find it and make them like tie-dyed.
You spent some time down in Pensacola, too, for Rip Tyler with WOW, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I did it. Sure did. We worked with, Boyette was down there then, and Bob Sweetan. I think I've got a tape here Ted sent me just probably 2 months before he passed away of some of that down there. I was working with Pork Chop Cash. We had an angle, me and him.
This was the one I've probably got the same thing. The one that you, before you came in, they were mentioning you coming in. You sent a little music vignette in there of the Dirty White Boy song.
I did a Dirty White Boy video. They played that. Yeah, flipping my hair.
Yeah.
Digging around all that stuff you got laid out tonight, you find your silk drawer?
Well, I blowed a hole through them. Oh, man. I found a booking sheet from Memphis from Dallas here just now, flipping through all this crazy stuff. May of 1990. Jerry Jarrett, Jeff Jarrett, I guess it was. It's Memphis, Louisville, Evansville, Dallas, Texas, Nashville, and Munnsville, Kentucky. I think that must have been Eddie Marlin's town. I guess I got more stuff than I thought I did.
You could make some folks on eBay real happy, Bubba.
You reckon?
Oh, let's trust me. They can make you real happy, too.
Yeah, I found the ring announcer's sheet from Dallas, Texas at the Sportatorium about a year ago. I got it out of my office at the store, and it's got, I think it's Jerry Lawler and Kevin Von Erich, or Kerry Von Erich, and then me and Tony Anthony against Jeff Jarrett and Billy Travis, and then it says Stunning Steve Austin versus Bill Dundee, and Jimmy Valiant, I think, somebody, I don't remember, but some kids was there, and they looked at it, and I said, Stunning Steve Austin. Says, is he any kin to that, what does he call himself, Steve Austin?
Stone Cold.
Yeah, Stone Cold Steve Austin. I said, yeah, he's kin to him.
This is when he was hungry.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was that, probably.
That before he got stone, got cold.
Yeah. So he's got it now, yeah. But, yeah, in the Bank of Lafayette here, there's a wrestling poster President of the Bank owns from 1961. The main event is Jackie Fargo. Let's see, it's the Black Monsters is the tag team against Jackie Fargo and my goodness, see that I can't think of it now who it is, but Gene Dundee's on it. Flash Monroe.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's on it. Yeah, but it's 1961. It was at Lafayette High School, promoted by Nick Gillis. Mario Galante, I believe, was Fargo's partner. Would that have been right, Mario's?
Yeah, Mario, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Okay.
61.
Would have been right. I walked in and saw that. I got all kinds of old history.
That guy's had this thing for a while, then, hadn't he?
Yeah, it's very good shape too. It's been plastic covered, and it's he's had it for years, and he's got all kinds of old memorabilia from things that happened in Lafayette. It's the only hometown bank, I guess, around this area. But so they've got all kinds of old memorabilia. That's pretty cool. I saw it. He said he'd give it to me someday. So I don't know. Maybe he will. It'd be kind of neat.
Stuff like that, you think about all the stuff we threw away over the years and never thought it would amount to anything.
Apparently, I didn't throw a whole lot away from what I'm finding.
Well, that's good. I found a...
Actually, some I lost a lot in my house when it burned, but we still got a lot.
I came across, one day we were talking, I guess at one of our get-togethers here, and we were talking about the first wrestling match I ever went to. And the only thing I could remember about it was the main event, which was Lorenzo Perini and Fritz Von Erich. And it was in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Well, the next week I get from Chuck Thornton, I get a Xeroxed copy of the Ringsider from that night.
Oh, man.
I mean, it was complete. He put it on 11x17 paper, and it was folded over just like the Ringsider, but it just was, a copy of it. And then here about 2 years ago, and I don't even remember who gave it to me, somebody came up to me and told me, said, here, I think you'll appreciate this. And I actually have an original Ringsider from the very first wrestling match I ever went to now.
Good night. That's awesome.
It's like 1964. It was 15 cents or a dime or something, but it was but it was the very first one I ever went to. And my kids, and when I'm gone, my kids will go, well, what's this piece of trash? But to me, I wouldn't take $1 million for it.
Well, sure.
That was the night I fell in love with his business. I'm still not over it.
I know. The earliest memory I have, honestly, I was six. Norm Veazey was the ring announcer for television wrestling at Channel 12 in Chattanooga. My mother worked in the tax office, and Norm owned property in Walker County. He came into the office and she recognized him and told him that her son loved wrestling. He gave her free passes to television. Of course, it didn't cost anything to get in, but you had to have a ticket.
Yeah.
And he gave her passes, and they took me to Channel 12. And back then, they would take a little break where he would walk around the crowd and interview a couple of fans and ask them who their favorite wrestler was, where they were from, and all this kind of stuff, you know, kind of personal stuff.
Yeah.
And 6 years old, he stopped and asked me what my name was and who my favorite wrestler was. And, of course, Tojo was the biggest heel there. And, of course, he was my favorite wrestler. And I told him, Tojo Yamamoto was my favorite. And I guess that day I fell in love with wrestling. You know, I was sitting ringside at Channel 12, seeing all those guys that I'd been seeing at my grandmother's house on television, live and in person.
Yeah.
I actually sat in the dressing room at Channel 12 when I was 15 and told Tojo that. And he looked at me and says, Jimmy Powell, very bad. You make me look old. Don't say that. So, but I think that kind of started mine and his affair of just caring for each other. He loved me. He took me in and taught me how to, you know, the other guys kind of taught me how to lock up and wrestle, but Tojo taught me how to get heat or get over as a baby face. And he would call my mother and tell her I was in the summertime. If I was wrestling in Nashville, he would call her and tell her I was in the motel room safe. I mean, you know, we were just that close. And but that was that 6 year old. I know that was when my love affair with wrestling started. And there's a few years I didn't watch it, but I have to admit I sneak in there now and turn it on Monday nights just to see a little bit of what they're doing before I turn it back off.
Yeah. Well, I'll run through the channels and look.
Usually I figure if you catch the first 15 minutes, you pretty much know what's going to happen. So, you know.
Well, you know, the thing you said there, and I know Jerry went to the matches in Columbus when he was coming up, and he you know, Michael was big into the matches in Columbus and Mobile, and Gene went to the matches. You know, the thing, you know, people knock our business, and they oh, well, it's just, you know, guys in tights and rubbing up against each other. You know, the thing about it was is our, you know, you could go watch all the John Wayne movies you wanted to, but what were the chances you ever going to meet John Wayne?
Yeah.
And, you know, with us, these guys were in our town every week.
Yeah.
And you could touch them and you could talk to them. And and I'm like you, Jimmy, these guys were bigger in life to me. I mean, they were like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. I've got I haven't found it yet here tonight, but I've got my autograph book somewhere that's got all those guys that was my idols when I was a kid standing at ringside at the auditorium in Chattanooga. I've got somewhere here. It's, you know, I've got Jackie Fargo and Andre the Giant. And I've got Dennis Condrey when he was his first time to work, I guess, in Chattanooga. He was a young baby face. You know, I mean, I remember standing beside the ring and scraping the dried blood off the apron and looking at it. You know, because everybody else said it was fake, and I'm looking at it and thinking, that looks like blood to me, you know.
Yeah.
Lordy.
I can still
Bill Dundee chased me around the ring one time. And when I was a kid trying to get an autograph, he was a heel, and he chased me around the ring, and I ran and jumped in this guy's lap on the front row in Chattanooga. Oh, man, I loved it.
I can tell you right now, the very first live card I ever went to was May 9th. It was May of 1971. I'm not sure the exact date, but I can tell you to the match, every match that was on that card and who won it. The opening opening match was Frank Dalton against Nikita Malkovich. Dalton won that. Second match was Flash Monroe against Johnny West, who worked everywhere else as Kevin Sullivan. West won that one. Then there was a 2 out of 3 fall tag team match. You guys remember those. It was Don Carson and Dick Dunn against Eddie Sullivan and what he was known as in the Mobile territory, Dandy Jack Morrell, which was Frank Morrell.
Yeah.
The semi-main event was Mike Boyd. Again, another 2 out of 3 fall tag team match for the United States Tag Team Champion.
Georgia. Mike Boyette and the Wrestling Pro beat the great Ota and Mr. Coma, who were the champions at the time. They lost the belts. And the main event was Lee Fields against Bobby Shane.
Wow.
And Bobby Shane won. So that was the very first live card I ever went to. It was in the big arena in Mobile. At that time, it was called the Mobile Municipal Auditorium. And it was sold out. There was 10,000 people in that building. And that was, I had never been to anything like that in my life. And I was just, I was already a fan from, like Bobby said, I used to watch it on television when I was real young in Columbus. But when we came home from Germany and moved to Mobile, that's when I really got hooked, because my grandfather was a big time wrestling fan, and I would stay up on every Saturday night. I'd go to his house and stay up and watch wrestling on Channel 3 at 10 o'clock every night. And he hadn't been to a live match since the 50s. And Lee Fields was always his hero. Of course, Lee was retired and was promoting him, but they did an angle with Bobby Shane, and Lee came out of retirement. My grandfather had to go. So he took
me. Wow.
That was the thrill of my life. And they handed out little single sheets with all the listings of who was on the card that night. And I had that up until probably the time I divorced about 12 years ago. And I had a whole scrapbook, because I used to do newspaper clippings and all that stuff when I was a kid. And I had all that stuff, and I would give anything to find them, because I have photos that I'll never be able to replace, you know, autograph photos and stuff like that that I had collected over the years that I'll never be able to replace.
That's amazing.
Mike, I'm going to have to depart.
All right, dude. Well, I hope you get feeling better.
I will, guys.
Just remember, next week we're going to be off there, because Bobby will be just getting home from Las Vegas, he and Mr. Bennett there. They're going out to Las Vegas and dance for the showgirls out there.
That's called Las Vegas.
I've got the circus in town, so I'll be tied up with the circus next Thursday. We won't do the show. But and once again, let me mention our sponsors of tonight's show, Renegade T-Shirt. sponsoring our show tonight. And we're going to have them cut a commercial for us, and we're going to start running it.
We'll have the fun next week as we get back.
You guys leave on Saturday morning?
We leave about 8:25, I think, Saturday morning.
Well, everybody stay safe.
We're going to try, Jerry. Get the feeling better, bub.
All right, guys. Y'all take care.
Take care, Jerry.
Yeah.
Good night.
Bye. Actually, this afternoon, he said, just about 4 hours ago now, so he's not doing too well. I appreciate him lasting through the time he did last with him.
Yeah, he did. That was good.
He's a good guy. Good guy. Well, did you ever cross paths with Mr. Bennett, Jimmy, in the ring?
No, actually, I don't think I did until me and him got to knowing each other through the reunions and I guess through his son-in-law.
Watch your mouth.
I can't remember. you know.
That's Janice's son-in-law.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, man. Well, through my buddy, I guess I should say, my buddy Phil. How about that? Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
There you go. Tell you what I did just find here, too, Bobby, it's kind of cool, is I got a bunch of Jerry Blackwell's Southern Championship Wrestling's his TV sheets.
Goodness.
I found them, because I booked his TV for over a year.
Yeah.
And I just found all that, too. All that, lost all that. That's pretty cool.
You got a bunch of gold laying there.
Yep.
Man, that's pretty neat.
Power Day. Jimmy?
Georgia Power, yeah, that's right.
Power.
That's actually one of them here that's Joel Deaton and versus David San Martino, Georgia Power versus Steve Lawler and Mark White, the Invader, Mr. Atlanta and Mike Golan versus Bullet Bob and Brad Armstrong, Kevin Dillinger versus Steve Pritchard, wrestling two against, let's see, I don't know, his name's marked out, so I don't know whoever he worked with then. But Ray Bailey, I kind of.
It didn't matter. He took a knee, whoever it was.
Yeah, he took a knee and dropped out.
I'm not, that's for sure. Yeah.
He's supposed to be there this week. I'm looking forward to seeing him, John.
Oh, is he really?
He's supposed to be in Vegas, yeah.
Wow, cool. I'm going to have to go out there. Me and Tracy need to go next year, maybe.
It's if you've never been to Caulfire Alley, everybody needs to go at least once. It's not Mobile now. You can't go out there with thinking it's going to be like it's a little different, but it is it's a fun time. There's some interesting folks out there. It being open to the fans, you get some real. We had some guy last year, Jimmy. He walked in, man. He had a cape on, and I don't know who he was. And he went back in the back, and he just proceeded to scream to the top of his lungs and start cutting an interview. And I don't even know what he was doing, but everybody in the room stopped and looked at him. And he was screaming and yelling about he's going to do this and he's going to do that. And then when he got through, everybody clapped. He walked out. I don't know who he was.
Oh, man. Wasn't Randall Brown, was it?
It wasn't Randall Brown. But I'll tell you, I'll give you the funniest thing Randall Brown did. Well, he was there. Randall wasn't there last year. This was 2 years ago. There's a guy out there, Jimmy, that shows up. He goes by the name Super Tramp, and he wears a mask. And he'll show up on Monday, and it'll be laced up like he's going in the ring. Laced up and tucked under. And he wears that mask for 3 days. Never takes it off. Comes to the banquet with a mask on. And we kept asking everybody, who is this guy? Nobody knew him. So Randall, it was about 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. Randall came down. He sat down in that little room there next to me, and Charlie Smith and Gene was there. And this old guy come over with that mask on. He had a little bag over in the corner, and he was getting something out of it. And Randall said, hey, bud, where's the last territory you worked? He said, well, I was in Calgary in 98, 99, something. And Randall said, well, was Kay Fabian up there when you was there? And the guy goes, who? He said, Kay Fabian. He said, I think he was up there. The guy goes, no, never met him. And when he did, I was under the table laughing. I got down and got under the table. And Randall just kept on. Randall said, I know he was up there. I talked to him. I know he was there. And you never met him. He said, no, I've never met him. Oh, ain't this a shame?
He just
disgrace.
Yeah, he just didn't know it.
he did.
Lord, that's funny.
Goodness.
Hey, Bobby Ethel Brown tried to tell me in Nashville last year that he just pulling our chain. He knows everything. I said, yeah, I hear you.
Okay, he does.
he's got her buffalo.
Oh, well, it takes all kinds. But it's a fun trip. Have you ever been to Vegas, Jimmy?
Yeah, I've been to Vegas for
a
merchandise show. Yeah,
it's worth going out there just to look around.
Yeah, I know it. Pretty crazy.
Oh, geez. There's so many people out there you can't breathe.
They got some sausage from hell out there, too, brother.
Yes, sir.
Tell you what, they got some. That's the only place I've ever seen where they cut the side out of your crab legs so you don't have to crack them, just pull the meat right out and eat them.
Yes, sir.
I remember food.
Marie Osmond is playing at the Flamingo right up the street from us, and Hope Springs Eternal. I'm hoping she's going to bump into me and won't take me home. So, hadn't happened yet, but you just keep hoping.
Put you on Nutrisystem.
Yeah. That'd be all right. She put me on Nutrisystem. Put me on the payroll too. That'd be all right.
All right. Old Marie, huh?
Well, Bill Bowman and I were talking about this afternoon, and he said if he hits the big one, if we walk by you guys with all the showgirls out there, we'll wave to you.
Y'all do that. Oh, Lordy. So who are them? Who are them two K faves? Yeah. So when are y'all guys leaving?
About 8:25 Saturday morning.
Gene, are you going by yourself or is your bride going with you?
Jan's going with me.
No, she's going with me.
I didn't figure she'd let you go without her.
No, she's going with me.
Oh, okay, she's going with you. Okay.
She's going with me.
I've been born today by Smith Coffee Company, the president, that he had a restraining order against me and you. We couldn't get 100 yards in Las Vegas.
Yeah, he.
Oh, man.
Oh. Well.
Okay.
I'm having to be nice to Mr. Smith. The room is in his name.
Yeah.
I told him he wasn't going to play none of it either.
Oh, man. Oh. How long y'all stay on the air on this show?
About 30 more minutes, but we can cut off whenever we get tired.
Yeah, I didn't know. I need to listen to you more often. I guess I just I'm usually in bed by now. You know.
Please do.
I'm getting old. I go to bed early.
Me too.
We're all that way. We're all that way.
What's that?
Genius, once again. In bed by 7 o'clock, he's got to get up at 3 in the morning.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I used to be a little earlier riser.
Who's running your route while you're going to be in Vegas, Gene?
I'm on vacation, my friend. When I take vacation, my route takes vacation.
Hey, Bobby.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, I didn't go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead, Jimmy.
I just, I ain't going to believe this. I just found a K&H wrestling gear price list. amazing. It says, this is the same as wrestling card. It says, subject to change without notice. Oh, man, I can't believe this. I just opened it up here, opened this envelope. I thought, what is this? It's actually in the envelope that was mailed to me. What year? I can't see the return on this thing, but must have been right after I got married because it was mailed to my mother-in-law's address.
What were the prices?
Well, let's see. A mask, regular weight mask was $11. Special style to it, special style face, $2. Let's see. The trunks, $12.65. They were high back by then. They'd went up a lot since you ordered them. The wrestling boots, let's see.
$16. $18, I'm guessing.
No, actually, it don't have a price. Let me see here. Maybe it does on the... That was subject to change, yeah.
Yeah.
See, pants, gym pants, shorts, singlets, long tights, briefs. Well, it does not. It's got like a little mimeographed catalog, you know.
Yeah.
All the prices have been marked, been blocked.
I have actually got in one of my photo albums back here. I actually have a K&H catalog.
Do you?
I don't know how I kept it.
This
all
is just
years,
a copy.
But I've got one.
Yeah, I used to have one too, but they just sent me copies this time.
And you know, used to when you get a catalog from them, you know, it wasn't an expensive thing. It was like something somebody put together and, you know, on their sale. But they always had whatever the newest material was. I remember when they first came out with what they called 5-0 material, which was, you know, had that Hawaiian look to it, sort of like the, you know, Afflin Seek Award and those kind of things, Toa Tiki. But they would always have a little, maybe 2-inch by 2-inch splotch of the material stapled to it.
Yep.
So you could see in the, and like when, if you wanted a ring jacket, they had the little LeMay cloth or whatever you call it there, a little shiny cloth. They'd have it stapled in there where you could see what it looked like.
Yeah, their satin ring jacket was $46.75, and their shimmer cloth was $60.
$60, geez. You know what they'd cost you today?
No telling, man.
I've got one ring jacket left that I kept, and it was made for me. I had her, Olivia Walker, made it for me, and I had her. You know, it was red and black because Jerry Oates had me a pair of red and black boots brought back from Japan. He brought them back to me, and I kept the ring jacket. I think she charged me $75 for it when she made it for me, and it's of course. I can put it on. The sleeves still are the right length, but the waist don't quite meet anymore. But I kept the ring jacket, and I got two pair of boots back there. I got a pair of Noel Ashmade. I kept those, and I've got a pair that Abdullah brought me from Japan, and I still got those. And that's pretty much all I got left.
I got a couple pair, I think, of boots, but I've got a satin jacket that actually Cowboy Langston gave me, and I wore my first match, and I still got it. Not in real good shape, but it's still there. It was a red ring jacket. But Mildred Gordy made a lot of my stuff, Terry's mother, because she made all the Freebirds outfits.
Yeah.
And she did Larry Cheatham's stuff when he did that, and then. She made a lot of the guys up here their stuff, but she could really. She was a great seamstress too. But she made all them big robes that Michael Hayes used to wear, you know, with the rebel flags on them and all that stuff. She made all that.
Jeez.
Bo James is listening to our show, and he just sent me an instant message. It said Missy just had a shimmer jacket made for $234. So let's add to the price of
$234.
Wow. Wow.
I think I bought because I only wore butcher tights, and I think the butcher tights I bought from them were $14-16, something like that. Well, unless you had them two toned, and then they were like $2 more.
Yeah.
I never had a catalog. I bought Norman Lawson's catalog and ordered all my stuff.
I thought you was going to tell me you had to order out of the Mike Jackson catalog. I didn't know.
Oh, jeez.
He
had the catalog, but there was a little slight markup.
Yeah.
Slight markup in the price for shipping and handling.
I'm glad
you said Bo's listing. He had a little thing on Facebook where he offered some free wrestling tickets if somebody had come over and cut some grass for him. I thought that was a heck of a deal. And I put on there I could be there in a week's time on my riding mower if he was serious about the free tickets, but he never responded. So I made other arrangements.
Oh, man.
Jeez.
We'll get him to go up there.
Mike, the Hildegard price for that butcher, if regular weight here was $16, and if it's a heavyweight, it was $19.
That's what they got.
You know the difference in a heavyweight and a lightweight?
I don't know. I never had anything.
The heavyweight was land.
That's right, it was.
They used like a double piece of material.
Yep,
that was the difference
right.
in them.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I was trying to find
it. Just was not enough without being lined.
I always wore wrestling trunks under my referee's pants, under my long pants, because in case my pants split, I had something on under it. And I always ordered heavyweight with a high waistband. And that was just a... But, man, those things lasted forever. And me and Ronnie, well, I tell you there, toward the end, Ronnie did it first, and when it, we seen it worked, we all started doing it there. There toward the end of my refereeing career, and I know Scrappy and Nick Patrick followed suit, we used to order our referees' outfits from K&H. Me and Ronnie started ordering our referee shirts there because you could get black and white stripe, you could get a blue and white stripe, and you could get a red and white stripe. Mm-hmm. And then we started ordering the, I don't know if they call them gym pants or what it is, but it was made out of the same material that the trunks were made out of, but they were long pants. And they were bell-bottom. Yeah. They were flared at the bottom a little bit. Not big, but a little bit, so they'd go over your boots easy. And we'd have belt loops put on them. And they were that, you couldn't wear them out. I'd go to Kmart and buy those double-knit slacks to referee in, and 2 days later I had holes in the knees. We ordered those things. We paid a little more, but we never wore them out.
Yeah, the slip-on dress pants. They got them right here. Yeah, they got them listed right here. Slip-on dress pants.
There you go.
Yep, that's what they were.
We gave.
But you guys also had the matched shirts too.
We eventually went to the same shirts. I would order the shirts with a full-length zipper, where it wasn't even a pullover. It was like a jacket and zipped up. And we would order, my favorite one was a burgundy one or a maroon one. I wore a maroon outfit with black boots or white boots or whatever, you wanted to do. Ronnie had a maroon one, and I think I had a blue one. I think Ronnie had a blue one, too. And then I know later on, Scrappy and Nick, I think, went to black.
Yeah.
I mean, they just couldn't wear them out.
Pretty neat. I'm kind of glad I got this bag out tonight.
I'm glad you did too. It's a lot neater wearing those than it was like Charlie Smith used to have to do, and wear that white shirt and a bow tie.
Yeah.
Oh,
man. Hey, Mike, you're pretty heavy in the historian. Rocky Brewer. Do you know anything about him after he left, or while he was here with Nick, or after he left?
No clue whatever became of Rocky Brewer. I've got that, I'm sure you've got it too, but I've got, I guess it's 80, 81 Chattanooga TV with you and Rocky Brewer and Togo and Bobby Eaton. And who else was on there? Tio
and Tapu, the Manchurians.
The Manchurians were on there, yeah.
Yeah. Was that when I worked with Ricky Craven?
Yep.
Oh, jeez. That was memorable, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the first time I ever won on television, and the finish was he slammed me two times. The third time he went to slam me, I small packaged him, rolled him up.
Yep.
What a finish.
Oh.
Harry Thornton says, Jimmy Powell wins.
Oh.
I don't know if you still got it or not, but I did have a match from Georgia. It's you and Tommy Pritchard, but I can't remember who you're working against. Stan Hansen and Ole.
Stan Hansen, yes. Oh, yes.
Somebody got tatered with a lariat.
Yes. Yeah, I don't remember who told me, but somebody told me when he starts to hit you with that lariat, they said, just start falling.
Oh yeah, get your feet off the ground and just go down as quick as you can.
Yeah, don't stiffen up, don't tighten up, just start falling just as soon as you get close to him.
Oh,
you know.
Well, he couldn't see you. God love him, what a nice guy, but he couldn't see you. He'd kill you.
I know it.
I got a couple of callers I want to get on the line with us real quick, see if they've got any questions for you. So I'll hang on just a second.
Okay.
Caller from area code 706, you're on there. Go ahead.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Bobby. This is Dale Ingram.
Hey.
Some of the guys y'all talked about tonight, I'm probably one of the few people in the world that remember them. Captain Hook's promotion, that was the best outlaw promotion that there's ever been. And I think I told Mike one time, I guess it was the Wild Man Watson that they were talking about. He kind of had a hillbilly gimmick. And me and a buddy of mine would go to Murphy a lot of times. They'd run these little spot shows up there. And we'd try to mess with him, you know, make up names and stuff like that. And he had that big old walking stick. And he's supposed to be a hillbilly. And I walked up to him. I said, "Nice stick, buddy." He said, "Thanks, dude. I mean, the perfect surfer lingo that you ever heard of." And that killed the gimmick right there. But y'all were talking about Rocky Brewer a few minutes ago. I've got a couple of DVDs of a promotion up in Idaho or Summers up in there. And old Rocky hit the big time up there. He was top dog. His ringside.
Oh, really?
I think that's the name of it, Ringside. And he was their champion, and he had a brother. I don't know if he's really his brother or not. I can't think of what his name was. But old Rocky, he went on from Chattanooga, and he hit the big time. Might not have made much, but he hit the big time.
Where was that from, Dale? Oh, that's great.
I've enjoyed the show. I guess the good Lord is preparing me to be a Falcons and a Braves fan. I live in North Georgia, and I just live in the perfect area to get wrestling on TV. I can get it from Greenville. I can get it from Birmingham. I get it from Knoxville, Chattanooga, and Atlanta. And even though I lived in Georgia, and they probably had better talent, Gulas, his wrestling, that's always kind of a home team to me. And,
me too.
I just got a kick out of all that. Harry Thornton, that was always my favorite announcer.
Did you ever get Channel 61 wrestling when J.D. Kyle and Captain Hook was promoting that?
No, I never did get that. We couldn't get UHF up here.
Okay.
Bobby gave me some of the most exercise I've ever got in my life. He talked about moving that ring to Channel 17. Me and a buddy of mine, we moved antennas all over the yard trying to get Channel 17. And we'd make antennas out of stove racks and all kinds of stuff. Buy UHF antennas. We could not get it.
Yeah.
We finally got just a shadow of it. You could just barely see who was wrestling. But he gave me a lot of exercise when they moved from Channel 11.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
I just
I used to ride over to LJ. Did you say you went to LJ?
Yeah, I've been to LJ and Murphy just spitting death.
Murphy. Oh yeah.
I go up there, Bobby, he's talked about how much he enjoyed Murphy. And the
rock
dressing room and stuff. Yeah.
The rock gym. Yeah.
Well, the rock gym was probably the Hilton compared to where we worked. Worst building I've worked in my life. It was a Quonset hut next to some kind of baseball park or little league field or high school field or something. Had one 100-watt light bulb hung down from the ceiling with a pull chain to turn it on and off, and that was over the ring, and that was the only light in the building. True story.
Good.
It was all. And the main event was a battle royal with Happy Humphrey.
Oh, my.
Hey, but I was a star.
Wow.
I was in the wrestling business.
That's right.
Back then, I mean, I didn't know I was really seeing future stars like Terry Gordy. Captain Hook, he had the Pirates or something. I forget what they were. They were a mask.
Yeah,
the
Pirates.
And,
yeah.
And he was one of them. And, you know, I didn't know that for years after that. But
yeah.
I won't hear years no more.
The Wild Irishman. Did you remember them, the Wild Irishman?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Terry Gordy and Jerry Mika. Jerry Penny. Yeah.
I remember
Terry
when
was 13.
We went down there, and Bob Ward, do you remember him?
Yeah, sure do.
He was their kind of number one baby face. And there's some girl in the crowd, and one of the Pirates, they smacked the fool out of her. Boy, me and buddy thought, man, are they going to let him do that? And then we stayed, you know, a little after the show, and that's Bob Ward's girlfriend. But I've enjoyed the show. It brought back some old memories.
Good.
Take it easy.
Thank you, Dale.
I'll talk to you later.
All righty.
All right.
Bye-bye. Hey, Bobby.
Yes, sir.
I've just found a permission slip that says Jimmy Powell has my permission to check out at 11:30. Signed Melba T. Powell, who's my mother, so that I can check out early to go wrestle.
I love it.
And the sad part is, it's not my mom's signature, so apparently I forged it.
I love it.
You were a
first white
boy,
weren't you?
I love
it.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's priceless.
It is, isn't it? I just found that.
I love it. That needs to be framed and put up in your office.
Yeah, for sure.
That's good.
Somebody have to do that.
That's good.
Oh, man.
Let me get this other caller on with us, guys. I'm not sure who.
Okay.
Caller from Chattanooga. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, a call from Kingsport, not Chattanooga. Same area code.
Okay. Well,
doing well. How's everybody doing tonight?
Doing good. Well.
Great.
No. You're talking about Rocky Brewer and the man before me there beat me to it, but some people say Rocky's still in Napa, Idaho, and some people say he's passed on. So Bob Eaton thought he had passed, but Ed Moretti thinks he's still living in Idaho there somewhere. He went out there when Moretti and those guys were running, and he never came back. Bill Smith and Terry Donis and all of them came back, but Rocky stayed.
Right, yeah. Rocky was a real nice guy.
When me and Misty were staying out there, we tried to find him, never could find him. I didn't think it'd be too hard to find the only wrestler in the state of Idaho. Actually, within probably 1,000 miles of that place. we had no luck.
Man, well, I just kind of wondered. I found a picture here of all of Nick's baby faces. It's got Rocky Brewer, George Gulas, Jackie, and Rough House Fargo, and Bobby Eaton all together. And it's all of them are autographed. And that's what made me think of Rocky.
You sound like me. Misty tells me all the time, if you just sell all that stuff you got in them two rooms in there, we wouldn't ever have to make another town.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I like looking at it too much.
Yeah.
I had a guy Saturday night come to the table and give me a poster from 1966 with Whitey Caldwell and Rubberman Walker working with Ron Wright and somebody else from Bristol, Tennessee.
Wow.
Stuff like that is about impossible to find.
Yes, it is.
Jimmy, I was listening to your story about you and your dad there. That's almost identical to mine and my dad's. Except he would, we had the same deal all through high school. I was working probably 4 or 5 towns a week, going to school.
people wouldn't believe it. It's hard to grasp that now,
Never believe it. And these guys that break in now, you couldn't get to make 4 or 5 towns a week.
Oh, yeah.
They work once or twice a month, and they're happy.
Oh, that was my dream. I know when I got out of high school, Nick sold out. I came down there and worked for Bobby or Ronnie and them in Atlanta. I didn't get to work every night for them. So, like, the sheep was running in Detroit on a Friday or something. I'd drive all the way to Detroit and make $50, to work for the sheep. I mean, it was come back to some town in Georgia for Saturday. I mean, it was crazy.
And we'd do it all over again if you had the opportunity.
I guess.
We would. That's the thing,
I know. Everybody tells me now, they watch me get up out of my chair, and they'll say, well, I bet you wish you hadn't done all that stuff. And I say, nah. I said, it hurts, but I've done it all again.
So when you come and mow this yard, Bobby?
Look, man, I'm going to Vegas. I was going to drive my lawnmower up there, but I never did hear from you, so.
Well, I put the wife to work. She got out there and did it.
No.
Oh, man.
I built
goats, brother.
That's what I've been telling her for years. We need goats. got too much land here to mow. I built her a deck on the front of the house. I said, at least you can do is mow the yard. So.
I've been trying to get my wife to let me asphalt my yard and paint it green.
I heard that, brother.
AstroTurf.
Yeah.
Well, you were talking about East Tennessee earlier. I'm going to throw a name at you. Gene, you probably remember this guy, too. You guys remember a guy by the name of Ed Wolf?
Yeah, oh, yes, I knew Ed real well.
Ed Wolf, I don't know.
He was a police
officer.
Yeah,
sounds familiar, but I didn't know him.
I remember him real well. Whatever became of him? I know
he passed away about 4 years ago.
Oh, really?
He lost both legs, didn't he?
He lost one leg, and he stayed on with the police department. He was still working with the police department when he passed. He went hunting and didn't come home, and they found him. He was up in the tree stand. He leaned up against the tree and had a heart attack.
Is that the guy that was the policeman that was working that got his leg in the chair?
Yes, that's him.
Got his leg caught in the chair and gangrene set up in it?
That's him.
Golly, that's the first time I thought of that story in 100 years. I didn't know the name, but when you started talking, I remember when that happened.
When he passed, he could still bench press about 550.
Jeez.
He was still remarkably strong.
Didn't want to sell a bit for nobody.
Well, if you bench press 550, he didn't have to.
I think so, yeah.
There's many local legends in Kingsport about him and his strength, and him turning over Volkswagens and all kinds of stuff.
Wow. Mm. Yeah, he'd hit a guy so hard he'd unlace his boots.
They pushed him pretty hard up there, I guess, because he was a local. So I don't remember where I came across the story on him. I was going through Yahoo News or something, looking at old archives of newspaper articles from up that way, and he was a pretty big star in around the Whitey Caldwell days. I think he and Whitey used to team quite a bit.
He came a little bit after Whitey. His career wasn't about three years long. It wasn't real long.
No, it wasn't long at all.
And before he got hurt, Jim White once told me he had easier car wrecks than working with Ed. So.
That's like Jody Hamilton told Rocket Monroe. They work one night somewhere and they come out, and Rocket said, "Well, how was it?" And Jody said, "I've had easier street fights."
Hey, Michael.
Yes, sir.
I just found an 8x10 glossy of Gary Lawler.
Oh, really?
Apparently. No, he was actually dark-headed and got a goatee like Jerry.
He worked for Dick the Bruiser a lot.
Okay.
He was there with Great Wojo and Dr. Graham Jr. and all those guys. They all broke in together.
Okay.
He was around Hammond, Indiana is where he was around from.
Well, I was thinking he was the same guy that worked. Sheik had a job guy that used to do TV for him, and he was called Gary Fargo when he was doing Sheik's TV. And I figured it was the same guy, because I know that Sheik used to, was all the time sticking other people's names on guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did that to me. I was Tex McKenzie Jr. He took me to Trinidad and the West Indies Islands, and I was Tex McKenzie Jr. down there.
Nope, don't feel bad. I was Pat Rose Jr. for a week till I talked Bill Dundee out of it.
Bless your heart. Oh, man, Pat Rose Jr.
My first day at TV in Memphis, Dundee walked over and said, "You look just like Pat Rose." I get in the go to the ring that night, and I was Pat Rose Jr.
Oh, man. That's funny.
That's what I call Pat a say, Dad.
Yeah.
This would have made you Don Fargo the third, then, because Pat worked as Don Fargo Jr. for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I found a picture of Butch Thornton here also.
Oh,
Butch
really?
Thornton. Yeah.
I need to get a copy of that, because he came in and worked in Mobile. And
yeah.
Jimmy, you don't know about that, but I have claimed the title being the official Gulf Coast historian, I've started a website,
right.
and I am trying to get pictures of everybody that ever worked in the Gulf Coast territory. Even if they made one appearance, I'm trying to find a photo of them. And out of the thousands of guys who worked in that territory from 1952 to my cutoff date, which is January 78, which is when Lee Field sold it to Ron Fuller, I'm only missing 135 photos.
Wow.
Terry Thornton.
Well, I've got one Butch here.
Terry, he worked as Terry Thornton in Mobile. He came in and worked about 3 weeks. Yeah. And
I've got one here. We'll get you a copy of it.
All right.
Hey,
yeah.
Hey, Jimmy, how many towns did Goulas run in Georgia?
None.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because he had that Chattanooga TV, if he ever dropped down in there.
No, he ran Lafayette in the early years, and he ran Somerville a couple of times, but normally that was Barnett's territory, and he didn't go into Georgia.
He was,
yeah.
First of all, he was afraid of Gunkel, and then he was really afraid of Barnett.
Yeah.
He never
even went to Dalton as close as it was, you know.
Yeah, that's why I always wondered if he ever tried having that Chattanooga TV, because, you know, it had to go at least 60, 80 miles south of there.
Oh, it went down below, it goes, you know, below Rome. It went back then. I don't know how, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
Well, when Barnett finally bought Chattanooga, or bought that, you know, we went in and started running that TV. I mean, it boosted every house we had up through there. You know,
yeah.
We ran Rome off
that when
TV.
Dundee was running it?
Do what now?
Was that when Bill Dundee went up there?
No. Right. We started running Chattanooga TV when I was still there. We started running it back in the 80s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Up there in 81.
Yeah, somewhere in there, because
is that 12 or is that Channel 9?
I think we were going to 12. I can't. Now you, what were the call letters?
Yeah, that's where Dundee did his TV at 12. That's where the show was on, because I've got the last Goulas TV on Channel 12, where he says that Georgia will start showing here next week.
Well, I'm thinking.
Yeah, because on 12, all those, you know.
We were sending tapes in there, because, you know, we started running Chattanooga on Saturday night in the auditorium.
Yeah.
And then,
I remember that.
We were running Rome.
Yeah,
we were running Rome off of that. Well, off Atlanta and that, but basically off of that. And then, you know, we started going into Dalton and several of little spots up there we hit.
Yeah, that was WDEF E12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was it.
Because when Nick came back, we ran Channel 9. That's where we went to, up on the hill. we came back on Channel 3 as the UWF or something, Universal Wrestling, when they called George the promoter.
Yeah, I've got a few of those TVs. Where did they take? Is that where they take those at? It's got just
channel
like a panel wall in there.
Yeah, it's Channel 3. It was our little studio, and we taped there. And then actually, I think Dundee and them came in, Ronnie West and all of them came in there and did something for a while, too.
They went in 83. They ran eight weeks from June the 6th, 8 weeks before to that, and then Ole pulled the plug and they went back to Memphis.
Yeah. I knew it wasn't too long.
Michael, when you see Dundee, you need to get him started on them four people at that first TV taping, because that'll take two hours of your evening up listening to him bitch about that.
I tell you, the funny thing, I heard Ronnie Gossett. Remember Ronnie, who was the ring announcer for Nick Goulas, and he went in and managed in Memphis.
Yeah.
But when y'all came to Chattanooga to run, I think at the auditorium one night, there was probably 800 people or something. It wasn't much, too big a crowd. And Gossett was there, and Terry Gordy, I think, had brought him and got some heat for bringing him or something. And he was kind of making fun of the crowd, you know, and he said something to Ole about right back. He said, I remember one night Nick Gillis turned the 1,500 people away from the auditorium, and Ole looked at him and said, well, do you know where he turned them to? I'd sure like to have them back tonight.
Well, guys, we are out of time. Gene, Jimmy, Bo, I appreciate you guys joining us. Appreciate Dale Ingram joining us. And again, our show tonight was sponsored by Renegade T-Shirts. So you guys be safe and careful out in Las Vegas. And,
we will, brother.
Jimmy, you take care of yourself and everything. And Bo, you too.
Thanks, Mike.
We're going to be off the air next week for anybody listening due to people being on their way back from Las Vegas and me having the circus in town. If you're anywhere near Goldsboro, North Carolina, or Greenville, North Carolina, come see the circus. We'll show you the time of your life, I promise you. How far do you run over in the North Carolina, Bo?
Not too far, just around Boone and Asheville. Not more than 60 or 70 miles from home.
Somebody's running in Greenville this weekend.
There is 1,001 little outlaw promotions in every town in North Carolina. You think Tennessee's bad. Carolina's got 10-1 little promotions that we do.
Wow. Well, all right, everybody. Good night. I appreciate everybody joining us, and we'll get together in a couple of weeks and see what else we can get into. Appreciate you guys joining us.
Sounds good. Good night, guys.
Good night, guys. Good night,
guys.
Good night, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
For listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.